This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, this is John Franco, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN New York. Let's go Mets!
Nagy Johnny, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday, March 30th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours. The other 19 and a half are certainly your responsibility. Hope you're having a great day. You know who's having a great day? Francisco Lindor's having a great day because he knows that all he has to do is say yes, and he has a 10-year, $325 million contract, guaranteed. No matter what happens to him, the worst thing imaginable, God forbid, he gets that $325 or his family gets that $325. Now, he could choose to turn it down because he wants 12 years, $385. Some would call that greedy. I don't ever use a term like that. The earning span for these guys is very, very short. And I think by turning down the 10 years, $325, to me, it totally reeks of the union pressuring them because the union always wants to set new parameters. They want to set new guidelines. They want to set new guardrails. That's what the union does. Some players say, I don't care what you think. I'm going to sign because this is good for me. Other players are staunchly union guys, and the agents are as well. And they know that if you set that new level, well, the next guy's going to set another level. Maybe it's ego, but I don't think anybody's a bad guy in this. I know that that's a great talk show take, but Don and Peter, I'll tell you this. I've heard even, you know, I just heard the DCR guy say it'd be a bad look for Steve Cohen if he doesn't get this done. Well, how? How? He's offering $325 million for 10 years. He's offering $32.5 million a year, which is the most money per year that any position player has ever signed. How does Steve Cohen look bad?
Well,
really, the only guy that might look bad, and I don't think he should, is Francisco Lindor, because the fans, the public, can't understand turning down $325 million. But I don't think Steve Cohen looks bad at all if he turns it down.
But here's my ultimate take. I've been fuming over this all day. I've been red hot to do the show. I'm so glad we're starting at 2 o'clock today. I didn't want to wait another hour.
Wow.
Both can be true. Okay? Lindor can be greedy and yet be a good guy. And Cohen can be a tool and yet be a good guy. And I think all those things are true. They're both good guys, but one's greedy and one's a tool. And here's where I'm going. I'm sorry, Michael. Get what you can, but 10 years, 325 is not good enough. It's got to be 12 years, 385. I mean, come on. That's a little ridiculous, all right? I kill the NBA players for building super teams, but at least the motivation is to win. Here, it's just, come on. When's enough's enough already? Is he really going to turn down 10 years, 325, play on a lame duck contract and possibly get hurt? I know he's betting on himself to be great, but did you see the free agents that are available at shortstop? Why is he so guaranteed when we still have all this up in the air about the pandemic and how many teams are going to be willing to really compete for his services, that money's going to be a year from now? So come on. Yeah, it's greedy. Good guy, do what you got to do, but I don't think it's that awful to call him greedy. Now, and Cohen, here's where he looks bad. What are you doing tweeting? You look like a 12-year-old, for God's sake. This is the evidence where this is really a toy to these billionaires. Because at the end of the day, he's going to give them the money. He knows he's going to give them the money. It's a bad strategy, because why would you do that? Why would you admit that? But he would look bad if Lindor walked with all the social media stuff that he's doing. That's how he would look bad. But he knows at the end of the day, Lindor's not going anywhere. Because even if it went up to $400 million, this is pocket change for him. He's a billionaire. This is a toy to him. We're living and dying with this. This is a toy to Steve Cohen. He sneezes at $385 million. The only reason that he's playing the game is because he probably promised the other owners of Major League Baseball that he wouldn't go hog wild with the money. But at the end of the day, he knows that he can't be outspent by anybody. because he could set fire to that and not even weep because that's how rich the guy is. But he's a good guy. I'm glad he's my owner, but he's kind of a tool with the social media stuff. He's playing games. I think all of those things can be true.
I was just going to add this, the same point. The only risk that Cohen has taken has now been a completely unnecessary potential self-inflicted wound. His need to talk over the last several days, including the tweet earlier, Francisco Lindor is a heck of a guy. I sure hope he signs with us. If somehow he doesn't, those things seem very toolish and unnecessary.
See, here's my take on Cohen, and I agree with both of you. Cohen putting a negotiation on social media is a bad look. That's why when he tweeted what he tweeted over the weekend, I thought, sure, this was going to get done, and I still think it will. I don't think it's going to get done at 12 years, 385, because Steve Cohen didn't get $14 billion of wealth by not negotiating in a hard way. And I think he's going to be smart about it. I think Sandy's going to be his guardrail. I don't. If it gets done, it's going to be Francisco Lindor saying, "Oh, 10-325 is okay." But here's how Steve Cohen doesn't lose. Don mentioned the list of free agent shortstops next year. Let me clue you in case you don't know. Okay, Javi Vasquez of the Cubs, Seager of the Dodgers, Correa of the Astros. There's one more that I'm missing. And then there's Lindor. But I'll come up with the other one. Here's what I'd like.
Who'd you mention already, Michael? I'm sorry.
Trevor Story from the Rockies. That's the guy I missed. Okay.
That's right, yeah.
Here's what I would tell these five great players. Sit back, ruminate, and tell me the teams that can afford to give you the contract that Steve Cohen just gave you. All right? Because at some point, there's not going to be a chair left when the music stops. The Yankees are not signing one of those guys for that kind of money. The Dodgers probably won't. Either they re-sign. They're one of the teams that could because Seager will leave them. So there's the Dodgers. The Cubs aren't going to play in that ballpark anymore if they lose Baez. And Correa has been offered $120 for 6 years from the Astros, so they're not. Where's this money coming from? That's why Steve Cohen can't lose. If he said, as it's been reported, 325, 10 years is my final offer, you know what? If Francisco Lindor has a great year, Steve Cohen's still going to have that money. He's going to get one of those shortstops next year. He's not going to lose on this. Everybody thinks he's going to lose on this. He's not losing. Yeah, okay, he gave up a couple of young prospects for him. So maybe they'll win this year with Lindor because Lindor's going to be motivated to have a great, great year. If he doesn't take it and gets money somewhere else, then you know what? Cohen swoops in and gets Correa or Story or Seager. That's why it's such a huge risk for Francisco Lindor. He's the only one of the five that has actually got an ironclad offer on the table. It's more average value than anyone has ever gotten in baseball. The two biggest contracts, everybody looks at Francisco Tatis Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr., 14 years, but the average annual value is $24.3 million. So everyone went crazy when the Padres did that. Well, now the next shortstop up is being offered $32.5. Fernando Tatis is going to think this is a ripoff in 2 years. And then you've got Mookie Betts. He was given $365 million for 12 years. That's $32.1 million. Now, ironically enough, the deal that he wants, 12 years, $385, actually lowers the average annual value. But he wants that bulk money. Here's what I would tell him. Listen, do what you want to do. You're the one making the risk. It's not me. Wouldn't you rather have $325 in the hand than break your leg and never play again?
Right.
Because it's been done before. Juan Gonzalez was offered $140 million. And he turned it down because he didn't want to play for that team. He never got close to getting that money again. I think in the remainder of his career, he made about $10 million. So it can go away. It went away for Jody Reed on a much lower level. It went away for him. You can flex all you want, but it can burn you. You can break your leg. You can tear your knee. And teams might still not, because stadiums might not be filled all year. 20% capacity. Teams are not making money. So, again, to the five free agent shortstops, they're all great. I'd love to have any one of them on my team. Give me five teams that are offering you $325 million a year for 10 years. $325 million total for 10 years. I want five teams. I don't think you could come up with it because there aren't five teams like that. Not the Red Sox. They have Bogarts. Not the White Sox. They have Tim Anderson. The Cubs are going to let Baez go. Where are these big money teams that are stepping forward with this kind of cash? Who are these guys getting advised by to think it's smart? Now, we might be just whistling in the graveyard here, and he could end up accepting it. Maybe that will win out. But if he doesn't, he's got a lot of pressure not to break his leg or rip his knee apart. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Or just have a pedestrian year, and those other free agents have monster years, and now instead of being the best, he's the fourth best. A lot can change in a year. Certainly can. That's where the greed comes in, Michael. I agree that he's not a bad guy. Do whatever you can. Gouge these billionaires for as much as you can. But at some point, you know, when's enough's enough? And are you really going to take that chance? Now, at the end of the day, Cohen's going to end up with a shortstop. But does it make sense to trade for a shortstop, have that guy leave, and then pay top money for the free agent next year? You better win. Now, if you go out there and win, then it's worth it. But if the Mets end up having like a non-playoff year and they go out and they sign Trevor Story, yeah, they've got their shortstop, and it's only a small amount of money to Steve Cohen. But is that good business to trade for a guy and then go out a year later and then spend over $300 million for another shortstop?
I hear what you're saying, Don, but you can't be held hostage by the fact that you gave up two young shortstops and a couple of really, really, wet behind the ear pitchers. So I'm sorry. You can't give him everything he wants because you can't not sign him. I know they put themselves into a little bit of a corner, but there'll be shortstops available, and Cohen's going to have the fattest wallet. He can get whoever he wants. He's not going to lose in this.
Right.
I refuse to believe he looks bad. I agree with you, Don. The only way he looks bad is by tweeting what he tweeted. He should stop that, especially when it comes to negotiations. Even some fans snapped back at him the other day. Do you think this is funny? Because we don't. He goes, No, I'm deadly serious about it. But he has a flippant attitude about it.
Right. Yeah, because he probably doesn't care what people think, although I think he does in some ways because he's doing the social media thing. But, you know, if the Mets win, whether it's with Lindor, whether it's with Story, Correa, whoever they end up getting for the 2022 season, it's still not great business to give up assets for a guy that ends up walking at the end of the year, all right? Now, he may not care at the end of the day with the money he spent, but he certainly cared because he wouldn't go the extra mile. For Bauer, we're happy with that, but there was obviously a line of demarcation there. There was obviously a line with Springer. I kind of hoped he was this aggressive with Springer, to be quite honest with you.
Well, he did offer Bauer the most money. I mean, what could he do other than offer him the most money? Bauer took his hometown team.
Right. And we're all happy about that because I don't know if I'd want Bauer, but there was a line. You know, if we talk about Cohen and just spend whatever, there wasn't, you know, he wasn't throwing more money after that. But Springer, there was clearly a line.
Yeah, that I don't get because that was a player they really needed.
You know, is it a case, guys, where like this is all a game to Steve Cohen? And again, doesn't make him a bad guy because the guy's got billions of dollars. We have stars in our eyes when we hear $385 million. Even over 12 years, we can't even comprehend that kind of cash. This is in his ashtray.
Yep.
This is what's sick, right? So, yeah, it doesn't matter to him just like throwing that money around. But it's crazy that for one player he drew the line, this player he's just going to go nuts over it. What's Major League Baseball thinking? Or was the Correa or the Springer, Michael, a sacrificial lamb for that the Major League Baseball and the owners couldn't get on him for spending like a drunken sailor?
I don't know why he would. Maybe he made. I always wondered whether he made a tacit agreement because he's so much richer than everybody else. And if you let him into the club, he could own the club. But at some point, if you look at his financial career, this guy's cutthroat. He's a barracuda. He gets what he wants no matter how he gets it. He's going to get it. So, you know, he offered the most to Bauer, but I don't understand why he couldn't go the extra year. For Springer, that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah. So that's the point I was getting at. Is it a case of where, like, a guy like Sandy Alderson's just trying to reel him in? You know, like, what is it, there's like the fiscal responsibility is coming from Sandy, like whispering.
Well,
in
just
his ear.
Like you don't want to be punks. You know, just because you have the money doesn't mean you want to set the standard of we're the team that overpays everyone.
Right.
Well, because you know what? Eventually it's going to hurt because what's going to happen when other free agents come? I mean, you've set the standard, which the Players Association loves, but that's a lot of money. And it just puts those small market teams into, like, never land. They can't compete with this.
Well, let me give you a little defense of Lindor, okay? Before the Indians traded him, they made one final ditch effort. They offered him $200 million. Now, what's the difference for the three of us and the average Joe out there and Jane? What's the difference between $200 million and $325 million? You're still going to have one of the great lives that any American is going to have. He turned it down. And all he had to do was get traded, and he's already made $125 million more. He's probably thinking, I'll wait a little longer and I'll make more. That's probably his line of thinking. He turned down $200 million in a place that he absolutely loved. He did not want to leave Cleveland. He just wanted to be paid top dollar to stay there because he felt that they could afford it despite their small market status. They offered him $200 million. That's digging deep for the Indians. And he said no. By saying no, he now has another $125 million
True.
On the table.
And you would think that would be enough. But fine, listen, do what you got to do. I get it. He's got the power. He's got the talent to try to get that extra 2 years and that extra $85 million, right? He asked for it. Nothing wrong with asking for it. This is where the greed kicks in for me. This is where he loses me. If he ends up saying no and then plays without a deal. Because I think that's a huge mistake, and it's an awful risk to take for an extra 2 years, $85 million. You got a decade at $325. That's not good enough for you, and you're willing to risk it by playing this year and maybe having that money be off the table at the end of the year? Good for him for betting on his talents. But God forbid you take a fastball to the face. God forbid you tear up your knee. That would be greed to me. Ask for it, Michael. What's wrong with asking?
Yeah, you can ask him, and maybe he signed for the $325, right. And then this is all for naught.
Right, exactly. But to me, you cannot get over the greed factor if he ends up playing this year on the last year of a contract and saying no to $10,325.
Now, one thing I take exception to, okay, and I've seen a couple of people on Twitter do it, you know, it's a bad look during a pandemic. Well, wait a minute. Is it a bad look that Jeff Bezos increased his wealth so much during a pandemic that Apple increased their value? I mean, people continue to do business. So he's supposed to take less because we're in a pandemic? It's his life. He can do what he wants. Steve Cohen paid $2.4 billion for a baseball team during a pandemic. Was that a bad look? So I don't think that he has to negotiate because, unfortunately, there are many, many hundreds of thousands of people that are dead. And that a lot of people are unemployed. He's got his own life that he has to deal with. Maybe he gets this money and donates a lot to charity. But you can't say it's a bad look because it's the pandemic. It's all part of negotiating.
You could say it.
But I mean, what does that mean?
There's nothing wrong with saying it's a bad look. Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's a bad look in this country that when we talk about the 1% and all that money, when there's so much poverty, there's so much need, and yet there could be somebody there that can throw around $300-400 million like it's monopoly money.
Right.
Yeah. It's a bad look, but that's life. I mean, you could say it's a bad look. Doesn't make the players bad guys, doesn't make the owners bad
guys.
Right.
Doesn't mean that he has to accept less money because it's a bad look. It might be optically awful, but he can't operate under that assumption.
That's the K word, is optic. It's tough. It's always gonna be a bad look. When you turn on the news and you hear about somebody signing a 10-year, $32 million contract, and you see people that are homeless and people that don't have medical, people that are dying of diseases that they can't get cures for because they don't have medical insurance and don't have money. That's just a bad look. But that doesn't mean that Lindor's now got to be the good guy and then say, you know what, I'm going to sign a $1 million contract because it's a bad look. No, that's silly. Everybody does what they have to do, but you can't get around the fact that it does look bad.
Now, one bit of advice that I'd give Steve Cohen, I think that Don would agree as well. I'm not sure Peter would, but let me throw it out there. You seem to like Twitter when times are good. So it's great engaging with the Met fans who love you because you're not a Wilpon. And it seems like you're willing to spend money. But if things don't go the way the fans want, fans are fans. So remember when the GameStop stuff was happening?
Yeah.
And then you started getting death threats because you kind of fired off a flippant tweet then. And then you got into the back and forth with Portnoy. All of a sudden you canceled or you suspended your Twitter because people were threatening your family. Well, look at what happened to the kid on Ohio State. Because his team lost in the NCAA tournament. So if you think this is all fun and games with fans, if Lindor doesn't sign after you kind of tantalized everybody, I'm going to crowdsource and see how much we should. That was really a bad move, Steve. And I guarantee you, if the deadline goes by and you don't sign Lindor, you better deactivate your Twitter again if you don't want to hear it. Because you'll hear it. It's not all fun. You're not Uncle Stevie if you don't give the fans what they want. Then you're just as bad as the Wilpons. So it's all great. Your accessibility is wonderful, but it's only wonderful when the team's doing well and you're doing what the fans want. You'll fall out of love in a hurry. They will fall out of love in a hurry. Yeah, that's why this social media thing, he's walking a tightrope, Don. He really is.
Well, because again, I think this is just kind of a game for him. I think this is a way for him to gain attention.
It wasn't a game when he got threatened, though, over the GameStop stuff.
But that's the danger of it. That's the danger of social media. It's a game until it's all of a sudden not a game anymore. But I look at this, and I think he realizes he's got bigger fish to fry in his world where money is much bigger than it is in little tiny baseball. To us, baseball is the end-all, be-all when it comes to finances. He's making deals, Michael, where this is pocket change to him. This negotiation with Lindor is like nothing to the things he's negotiating in a day-in, day-out basis when we're talking about the figures. And he figures this is a great way. I'll put on my Met cap. I'll tweet out, have some fun. Oh, it's not fun anymore. I'm going to get out. Oh, it's fun again. I'll get in. That's how he's looking at it. He probably doesn't take it nearly as seriously as we do until all of a sudden it becomes real.
Yeah, and then he'll suspend Twitter again. Yeah, so.
And during the GameStop, all of a sudden it got real. Now it's playtime again. And when the Mets are winning, and I could totally see this. As much as I love having him and the Mets being out there, you know, when they win 14 of 15 games, he's going to be chatty. Lose 10 in a row, blow leads like they did in 07 and 08 for the division, he'll go away. Right? That's probably how it's going to be with him. I mean, well, I like it because Wilpons were never there.
He'll realize that it's not Shangri-La on social media when your team's losing, even if it's not his fault. It's not. It's just not. So these next 2 days, or this day and tomorrow, are going to be very interesting. And there's also an offshoot of this. You know, their commitment to signing Lindor that might affect other things. We'll talk about that. A lot of people want to talk about this. You know the deal, 1-800-919-3776. Our new start time is 2 o'clock. Starting on Monday, we'll be giving away $500 each day in the 2 o'clock hour.
Sure,
and we'll do that for 4 weeks for a total of $10,000.
Yeah,
how about that? So we're pumped up about that. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. It's brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years, being reported by several outlets that the NFL owners have approved the 17-game season. Well, that's no surprise. More money from TV. Right?
Big time.
Yeah.
And one less preseason game, right? Is that part of the deal?
I didn't see the specifics.
That was the proposal. 3 preseason games, 17 regular season games, but...
Don, you ready to start talking about, you know, going 10-7 to win the division?
It's gonna be odd.
Can we make the playoffs at 8-9? That's the question.
Yeah, you can't be 500 anymore, right?
Unless can't
you
get be 500
a tie. Yeah, those
so
are
so weird.
I got to tell you, just to show you the power of football, you throw out 9-7 in any walk of life. To me, that's football.
It's football.
And 9-7 is important because 9-7 means you could be a playoff team. Like 9-7, 10-6, those are all like football figures to me. They're as important to football as 1st and 10.
Hey, so are they adding a week to the end or moving up? or starting early?
No, they would. I would. They would go later, right, Michael? I mean, they don't want to do Labor Day weekend.
I think they'd want to go closer to President's Weekend.
I just would like to say, was it me or did football used to start earlier?
Oh yeah, it used to always start. I remember there was always like sometimes there'd be August 31st.
Now it's the last 10 years it's been like September 12th.
Well, because they don't want to touch Labor Day.
Why are they so scared of Labor Day?
Yeah, I don't
fear Labor Day.
I don't get it. Why they're not scared of Christmas, but they're scared of Labor Day? Come on,
Michael. How long have you been doing this show?
About 20 years now.
Smartest thing you've ever said.
Yeah, Christmas doesn't
play
scare
right
them,
through Christmas.
Labor
New
Day.
Year's Eve. Oh, New Year's falls on a Sunday. No problem. We're having games. But Labor Day?
Labor Day is a very solemn holiday.
Well, they avoid it. I mean, that's their kryptonite. Obviously, they're not scared of any sport. They're scared of like anything that television could put on at the same time. They're not scared of any day in the week. We found that out during the pandemic last year.
So it's got to be something more than they're scared of Labor Day because they're not scared of things. They probably have done, they've done research that it doesn't work and the players don't want it that early.
Christmas is not a problem. People are home in front of their TV. But I guess Labor Day, people are traveling. People are out. It's the last weekend.
I'll be honest, though, Don. Hold on real quick. Let's just humor me for a second. Labor Day Sunday, school usually starts Tuesday. Okay?
Yes.
This isn't when people are – that Sunday is not when people are on their big vacation. Because vacations generally run Saturday to Saturday, and you're home for school on Tuesday. So, yeah, people have barbecues, and rich people might be at their beach houses, whatever, but you're telling me people can't fix a burger and turn on a football game?
I bet you the big motivating factor is they probably got complaints from season ticket holders.
Yeah, because those are the kind of rich people.
Yeah, they're not in town.
Right. They're still on full vacation.
They're on vacation, or they've got, like you said, they've got barbecues, they've invited out to stuff, it's the last weekend to do things, and now you got a game, so they probably just got a push from the season ticket holders.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Mike in Long Island. Mike, start it off. Mike?
Hi.
Mikey. Hello.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I couldn't be better right now. I just had a point about Francisco Lindor. The assumption is that he's going to be a great player, but just last season, and I know it was a truncated season, but he was awful last season. What did he have, like 8 home runs, batted .250? So why is the assumption you just all of a sudden go back to his rookie self? So I think for both Lindor and...
Mike, that's not rookie self. The years before he was bad, and he wasn't terrible last year, he was just below what he had set for himself. Look at his WAR over the first 5 years of his career. He's an extraordinary player. You're not asking him to go back to his rookie year. You're just asking him to go back to 2019.
You're right. I'm getting a little bit of deer on the headlights. You're right. His first few seasons, the last season he had a 1 WAR. He was not such a great player.
Are you a Met fan?
Big Met fan.
All right. So you think Pete Alonso is going to be able to come back? Because he didn't have a good year.
Actually, this season I actually made a bet against the Mets. I don't think they'll be that great this season.
Well, he had a great spring. So is Lindor. I think they'll both be fine. I really do.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying for Steve Cohen, he should wait out the season because either way, like you guys have been having explained before, he's going to be able to have the pick of the litter. He's worth $13 billion. And also Francisco Lindor, he's just trying to get his deal done because if he gets exposed and has another bad season,
he's taking a huge – I can't get rid of the phone call, Anthony, so you're going to have to do that remotely. The bottom line is that's it. He's taking a huge chance because if he doesn't have a great year, then he's going up against 4 other outstanding shortstop. You take any one of them, and if you want to bargain, you can go for Marcus Semien or Brandon Crawford, both who will be free agents. So, I mean, there's 7. So if he doesn't have a great year, I don't think there's enough big money teams to make it all work. So he's taking a huge gamble.
Yeah. And I tell you what, Michael, you mentioned it in passing early, and it really irritates me when I hear that the union's involved. Listen, I know you want to get the most for your constituency and all that, although I think the union only cares about the big players. They don't care about all the players. They've made that clear. But stay out of it, man. I mean, the money's big. I know you want to try to kill the owners every chance you get, but you know what? Lindor's got to say, listen, I got to do what's right for me. Don't put the whole weight of the Players Association on me to get to the owners. I got a 10-year, $325 million contract. You want me to make it to try to push for 12 for 385 so you can look good as a union? I mean, come on.
A lot of players do. I remember Mattingly wouldn't play that game. Mattingly was eligible for arbitration. I think he was coming off his MVP year. And he could have asked for anything and got it. And George Steinbrenner said, I will never, ever, as I own the team, pay a player $2 million a year. And Mattingly came in at 1.975.
Right.
Just so he didn't tick off the boss. And he got one. He could have gotten 2.5. But George said he would never pay a player over $2 million a year.
But boy, you know, the union's trying to do right by its players, not use this as a way to really screw the owners over. Lindor's not supposed to be some pawn for you to get over on the owners.
Well, it's up to what you want to do. I mean, some players really feel strongly about it. Others don't. Others say, hey, I got to get mine. The union hates when guys sign contracts before arbitration years and don't sign for a lot of money. Rather than, you know, Tim Anderson. Look at Tim Anderson. He's one of the best players in baseball. The Chicago White Sox shortstop. Tremendous player. And he signed a deal because he grew up poor. That guaranteed him, I don't know, about $40 million, but he's getting paid nothing for the level of talent that he is. Nothing. I mean, he's going to get sick to his stomach when he sees Lindor get what he gets. But you know what? He wanted security, and that's it. Because a lot of these people, a lot of these kids grow up poor.
Right.
Let's go to Jimmy in Staten Island. Jimmy.
Hey, guys. Listen, I could care less about what Cohen does on social media. I don't care what he does. I really don't. But he made this guy one hell of an offer. That's a solid offer.
Yes, it
and
is.
This guy turns it down. I hope he lets him play for his supper this year. I hope they go out and get another shortstop if they have to next year. Because where is he getting an offer like this in this market next year? And I believe 100% what Donnie said. This is all the union. And this is why these baseball players are looked at like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? How do you turn a deal down like that? It's unbelievable what's happening in this game. It's really unbelievable.
I was thinking about this today, guys. It drives me crazy, and this is obviously a byproduct of not having a cap. But Tom Brady, look at all the discounts he'd give New England and all the championships he won. Has it affected him one iota? Not going to make nearly as much money as Lindor. LeBron James is not going to make nearly as much money as Lindor. You know, we kill these, or at least I do, kill these NBA players for building super teams. At least the motivation is to go out there and win. And some of them actually take less money to do it at times. But because there's no cap, the baseball players get whatever they can get, and, you know, more power to them. But, you know, at some point, when's enough's enough? Does anybody care how much Tom Brady makes? He's going to waltz to the one of the greatest players of all time. I mean, who's really keeping score on money? And even if he ends up being the highest paid shortstop, that'll last 5 minutes because then at the end of the year, one of those other free agents will end up beating him out. When's it about winning?
That's why what Jimmy just said is what I agree with. Cohen has nothing to be ashamed of. Cohen will not look like he lost this at all. He made a guy the highest average annual value of any player. I don't even count Trevor Bauer because that's wicked math right there. Because if you average his 3 years, he's not making $40 million a year. If he opts out after a second, he is. But whatever the case may be, highest average annual value of any player in baseball history, I'm sorry, you can't rip Cohen if the guy says no. The guy's got another agenda.
Hey, listen, we're talking about the whole optics thing with the social media and all that. You know, but if he doesn't care about it, he doesn't care about it. You know, so, yeah, you're right. He made it. Nobody's going to be able to call him cheap. If the Wilpons were here, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Lindor wouldn't even be here. You know, so it's a good thing overall from a Mets standpoint of trying to win and trying to compete with the Joneses and all that. But, you know, that does fall back to Lindor. Are you really going to play this year with that on the table that could be easily taken away if you get hurt or you're ineffective? Because, Michael, if he's not great this year, now that's 2 years in a row that he hasn't been great.
Yep.
And a story goes out there and hits 50 home runs, which isn't a crazy proposition. Then what?
All I know, I would have Francisco, who seems like a really great guy, read the story of Juan Gonzalez as a cautionary tale. It doesn't mean that you're going to get more at the end of the year. Could get less. You could lose. You could gamble and lose. And that's a huge gamble. So if you're sitting at a table in Vegas, right, and you're up $325 million, and you know that if you sit there, you could maybe go up $385 million. So you could gain 60 more million. But also if you sit there, you can end up losing the $325 million that you made. You know what? If you're a good gambler, you probably get up at $325 million. You don't worry about the extra $60 million. Because you know what? You're playing in New York, and the government's going to take over half of it. Whatever. So you're gambling essentially for $30 million in your own pocket. That's how he should think about it. Again, we might be having a completely different conversation tomorrow when he comes to his senses and says, you know what? I'm going to sign this. And I'll tell you another prediction. I don't think that Cohen will blink. I don't think he'll blink. If he comes out and says that, or it's been reported, 325, 10 years, best and final offer, and then goes up, he's going to lose a lot of respect. And then agents are going to play him all the time. 325, 10 years, that's the best and final. That's the last offer you make. That's it. It has to be.
Now, how do you turn that? How do you go out there and play?
And if you ever watch Billions, and the lead character in Billions is modeled after Steve Cohen,
mm-hmm.
watch what happens when somebody crosses him. Not pretty. Now, I know this is a different world than finance, but it's not pretty. I don't think he wants Lindor to do well, but he might not. As that caller Jimmy said, you know what? I'll take Trevor Story. Yeah, give me Correa. You find the 325 somewhere else. 1-800-919-3776. Kayla Greco Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
We told you about the new 17-game NFL season. Dan Graziano's reporting the NFL also officially announced that the season will begin September 9th and the Super Bowl will be on February 13th.
Ooh, that's my birthday.
How about that? Well, birthday Super Bowl party.
Yeah, why not, man? That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful.
That's what I'm talking about.
Would you guys come down?
Well, maybe. It's really a long ride for me. I don't know if I will.
Yeah, you're really changed, guy. Peter, it's amazing. All this is happening. Once he gets the vaccine, he's going to be a new man. He's gonna burn it up, right?
Yeah.
Still won't do Jersey.
Here's the deal, Peter. See, I'll talk to you. Make believe he's not here. This is payment for how he did that to me. He wouldn't come to my house because it was too far for a party that I had.
But because I had Rangers.
But not after the Rangers.
No, not after the Rangers.
Okay,
no.
There you go. It's all payback for that. It's a new Michael K. would go. I'd help you throw it. I'd pay for it. But it's got to be payback for transgressions. Now,
I don't think that was a transgression.
I do. I think Peter would agree, too.
Transgression?
I don't think he does.
Yeah, Michael, I don't know. That's a lot. The coming after the game, it's not really fun at that point. It's a pain.
Why? He loves doing Ranger games. He's not exactly pulling cable.
Yeah, but he finishes the game, and then he's got to drive the opposite direction a long way.
So even if he didn't do the game, he'd still have to drive the opposite direction from a long way.
Yeah, but I'd be coming with my family. I wasn't just invited. The family's invited.
Well, you could have gone without your family then because that would...
I know, but
you
know how many times I've been forced... First of all, we did that with Brownshire's wedding where I met Nancy at the wedding. It's amazing how the Rangers get in the way for playing half the games the Yankees do. It's amazing how sometimes the Rangers get in the way of, like, major events. Like, I had to come late to Brownshire's wedding. And I couldn't go to a couple of your Super Bowl parties because the Rangers a lot of times play on Super Bowl Sunday. And so now I can't go with Nancy and the kids. I'd have to go myself. I'd have to go much later than everybody else because the game would have ended later and then drive home alone. And I just said, I'm just not up to it. And as a friend, you should have understood. But no, you attack me and use it as fodder on the air. And now you're saying it's the equivalency of just out of sight saying no to a Super Bowl party at my house when you have no Yankees, you have no previous commitment. That's not even, man.
Yeah, I feel strongly about not coming, but thank you.
How about this? You're not invited.
Okay.
And I'm going to have a pool party in July, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to specifically do it like Yankees, Red Sox. Like, I'm not even going to invite
you. I would
out.
I told you I would come to the pool party. If you don't want to invite me, that's fine.
No, but I invited you to a Super Bowl party
that you spit on with phlegm.
Well,
see, he's acting like this. You know what? I'm going to make the bold move. Listen, I love you to tears. I love working with you. We're done socially.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, Peter and I are just going to bond better. I think it's going to reflect in the
and
show.
And you know what? I'm going to be that guy. I want the staff to take sides.
Oh.
That's not a good thing for you.
I'm banning you socially. Who's with me?
So you're making people choose?
Yes.
So then the move is, Don, if you really want to take this to the next level, next year, I would like to believe that by the Super Bowl, I think the world will be a different place. I think we're going to be in a good spot with the vaccines, etc. I think Michael owes us all a Super Bowl party after what happened last year, which now is worse than ever because it would have been everyone's last event and it was stolen from us.
And it could have been a super spreader, too. You have no idea what kind of animals would have been there.
You don't know.
But, Don, if Michael decides to have a Super Bowl party, you got to throw a competing one.
Yeah, that's my plan. And then we'll see.
Good luck.
Who's now? Listen, I'm sure I'm going to lose with all the suck-ups that I work with.
Good luck.
But let's see. Make a choice.
You know,
I'll make you proud.
Fans could be invited to our Super Bowl party. Let's see whose party they go to.
Oh, there's no question they'd go to yours because you've got the money, man. We've talked up the mansion.
You know what? You're not exactly on food stamps, my friend. You're fine.
Compared to you?
Okay. So who do the Giants and the Jets get with their extra 17th game? Well, the way the NFL did this, the corresponding conference, so the NFC East would go up against the AFC East. You'd play the team that finished in the same position that you finished in the previous year. So the Giants are getting the Dolphins, and the Jets are getting the Eagles. That's the 17th game. Not necessarily the final game, but it's the added game.
You know what? What do you think of this, Michael? I guess it's unfair, but wouldn't it be cool to get Jets and Giants every year?
Yeah, but then you'd have to do it for other, you know.
Well, then maybe rivals. You try to do it with the you try to do what baseball does, like the try to find the rivalries. You can't do it all the time.
Well, hold on. What's the exact comparison? There's no exact comparison.
Well, the Rams and the Chargers, I mean, that goes back. You throw the records out when they.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So, again, there's no comparison. There's no Raiders-Niners anymore. Ravens-Washington isn't the same thing.
But you could still do Raiders-Niners for the tradition of how long they were in the Bay Area together. I'll work on it. How about that? I'm going to work on it.
All right, put a call in.
No. I'm gonna write it down to see what I can create as the natural rivals. Now, obviously, this isn't going to work because then that'll be awful. Like, oh, the Giants get, or depending on what year it is, let's just say, oh, the Giants are getting an easier game against the Jets or vice versa. We hear that in baseball all the time too, right, Michael? With the Yankees and Mets because usually they'll play more than they'll play everybody else.
Right.
But I mean, you have an opportunity here to maybe create something, and wouldn't that be cool? To try to develop a rivalry between the Jets and the Giants and having them play every year.
You know, you could ruminate over this plan at your empty Super Bowl party.
Oh, that's just...
Oh, no, it'll be empty. No. I know that because I know.
So why are you doing it?
Because
I wouldn't want to hurt my friend on his birthday, and I would not throw a competing Super Bowl party.
Because you know what? In Jerry Maguire, he threw the same thing out. Because I'd be like Jerry Maguire. I know everybody would be like, you know what? The raises are coming. I can't go.
Little
but
do
that
they
one
know.
Person would go. That one, I don't know who it would be.
Dan Grosso would work as a server there.
Listen, Grosso would urinate on your invitation. He'd come to my party. All right, that's I'm just talking about like in staff of people.
Don, I have to think based on his treatment of him since things changed. RJ's going to your party.
And I think I'll get more than one, but well, the one person I get, that's a friend for life.
I wouldn't invite RJ after what he did.
RJ, I think Pusick, you're in, right? Because there'll be afternoon hockey we'll watch. We'll bet it on BetMGM. I got Pusick, right? Please Pusick, tell me I got Pusick.
Pusick, you're a Fordham guy. If you go to his party, you're done.
There's a lot riding on this decision, isn't there?
Yeah, all right, make it on the air.
Unfortunately, because of what I just have done, I need an answer now.
Oh, no. This is going to be...
Because I know Andrew's going to K's. I know Peter's going to K's. I don't have Tim. I don't have
Ryan. You don't know what I'm doing.
I might have Steve Hart.
You might have Steve Hart?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll have Steve Hart.
Now, are you demanding Steve Hart bring peanuts if he comes to your party?
Well, I don't think he'd come empty-handed. I got Steve Hart. I think I might have Brownshire.
No way.
I definitely have RJ.
You know what the executives
are. Right now, I'm waiting on Anthony.
Hurley's at my house. McCarthy's at my house.
Oh, yeah. No Tim.
Daugherty's at my house.
None of the salespeople. Oh, the salespeople have nothing to do with me. They can't sell me. They can't sell me on a bet. I've got over 100,000 followers. I did a great podcast with Don Jameson today, which was awesome. Check it out on social media. We did a metal podcast. Sales has nothing to do with me. They're all go to your party.
I know some other people going to Don's.
Who?
You're going to have the great EJ Raddick.
Well,
right.
I'm talking about. Listen, I've got mine, all right?
Leah Hextall will be there.
I know
Leah
Hextall outside will be this station.
Where do you think DiPietro would go, Donnie, huh? What do you think?
I got no shot at DiPietro. I think I got a shot at Canty.
You got Dave.
I better have Dave.
No, Dave's at my house.
You don't even want Dave.
Right.
You hate his guts.
I like Dave.
Who I believe I should have, because we're up against the clock. Here's who I believe we should have from the station, because I'll have plenty of people outside
the station. I've got
Han. I have a life outside here.
I've got Bart. I've got Han.
Easily.
I've got Greeny. Easy.
Easy. Here's who I have. I'll have Pusick. I'll have RJ.
I don't think you're going to have Pusick.
We'll
I
see.
Don't.
I'll have Steve Hart. I'll have Dave Rothenberg. I'll have Gordon Damer. I'll have Larry Hardesty. I'll have Anita Marks.
Anita Marks will be at my party.
Don, DJ Juanito has weighed in. He said he would go to your party.
Thank you.
He wouldn't be invited to mine.
Oh.
Where are you going, Peter? You haven't tipped your hand. Where are you going?
Oh, Don, you'll get Ballard at your party.
I'll get Ballard. I'll get Kenny Albert. I'll get Dave Maloney. I think I would get...
I wouldn't invite Kenny Albert. He's never invited me to his big soirees that he has. Born on the same day, never one invitation, never. To think I forget? Think I don't keep score? I don't have receipts? All right, let's towel off. It's getting ugly right now. We'll come back. More phone calls on... And I did promise you an offshoot of what this hurts with the Mets by concentrating on Lindor. We'll talk about that as well. Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. A shameless plug, and I'm doing this for Andrew, because Andrew, Don, he's kind of fallen out of love with Kevin Harlan.
Because, I don't think he ever was in love.
Yeah, he appreciates him as a broadcaster, but doesn't like the theatrics that become viral.
Right.
Well, Jason Barrett, who runs a website for our business, is having like a March Madness for broadcasters. And to get into the Final Four, I'm up against Kevin Harlan right now, and he's kicking my butt. Please go
I'm
to
going
sports-
viral. Doesn't Warner know this?
Sports Radio PD, at Sports Radio PD on Twitter. I need the K Army, to mobilize and have me beat Kevin Harlan. Just for Andrew, not for me. It's not about me.
Never.
Never has been. Never will be.
Apparently there's something with me involved in a...
Oh, yeah, team. You're in Tony Bacalaz. I think you're in the final game. It's you against... Gio.
Yeah, Greg Giannotti.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
This is why I can't respect what Bacala was doing.
Why?
I mean,
I'm getting crushed.
Well, then it's even more of a joke. Gio doesn't belong in the final, all due respect. And he's beating you?
No, how do you... that's what I'd like to know. He doesn't belong in the final, comma, all due respect. There's no respect there at all then.
No. It's all due respect.
No, people voted.
He deserves to be in the bracket, to be in the final. Well, and by the way, I'll keep it going.
I deserve to be in the final. I don't even have my name on the show.
Great point, but you're
who
terrific.
Who did I lose to, Don? I got my butt kicked by somebody.
I didn't follow it. Somebody had sent it to me.
Yeah.
So I'd have to look at the entire bracket. Oh, wait a minute. I got it here. I actually beat Alan Hahn to get to the final. Michael, you lost to Gio. So we made it to the Final Four. So two-thirds of this show made it to the Final Four. So it was Michael versus Giannotti, Han versus me. I beat Han 88-12.
I mean, come on. Even that's not right. And what you did to me wasn't right either.
Michael lost 88-12.
I mean, really?
That's a butt kicking.
All right, here's Kay's. Kay's road was he beat Melusis. I don't have the total there. Then he beat Carl. Oh yeah, he beat 91-9. Beat Carlin 56-44.
Wow.
Beat Gio 88-12. I beat Peter. You beat Boomer Esiason.
That's right.
Then lost to me.
Crushed by you.
Everybody loses to Don. I think. Wait, the party hold on, Don. You just said Gio hurt too.
Wait, Don. You just said Gio was in the final.
He is.
He is.
But then you just said Michael beat him.
No,
I lost to Gio.
88-12.
Yeah, Michael.
Yeah,
beat
I mean
Carl.
it was a butt kicking.
Wow.
I bow down to Gio. What can I say?
I don't know now because I'm trying to follow these. Yeah, I don't know what these numbers are now. But
I need some victories in life. Okay, so Sports Radio PD, please vote me over Kevin Harlan right now. I need it. Andrew needs it. Peter, are you upset you're not in the final of the Bacala Madness?
Well, everyone knows that the world of sports journalism is determined by a few select people. And one of those people is Tony Bacala on Twitter. And the fact that I am where I am, it's, in a word, disturbing.
Sure, I'm just appreciative to be invited.
You deserve to win that because you carry the station. Peter
can
call the reason.
Giannotti, I worked with Giannotti at the Fan. He was actually, my producer in NHL Live for a while.
Was he nice to you? That's all I want to know, because he seems like a nice guy.
No, he is a very, very nice guy.
Good. Then I like to hear that. Then I can root. I just don't want anybody to get hurt in the competition.
Terrific guy, terrific father, terrific talent.
How do you know he's a terrific father?
Well, because I don't get to see him that often, Michael, but I know him.
But have you observed him around his children?
I have not.
Then you can't say that.
Mark Melusis is a great father, too.
Have you seen him?
You've seen him? I have seen him with his children. Tremendous.
Okay. All right.
Are they doing a best father bracket? What's going on?
No, I'm just trying to say that I would be proud to lose to Greg. There's some people I wouldn't be proud to lose to.
But you wouldn't be proud to be slaughtered by Greg the way Michael was.
The way I was.
I don't want to get slaughtered. I mean, I'm getting slaughtered now, but it's all right.
Well, what's the voting right now? How many people are voting in the Bacala pool?
I don't know. He's got like 280 followers. I really couldn't tell you.
The Carmi comes through. I've taken the lead from Harlan. Yeah, don't mess with the Carmi. We need the Carmi to vote for Don in the Bacala pool.
How do you get the Carmi again? What is that?
K-Army.
Carmi.
It'll grow on you.
Well, now that I know what it means, I guess I can understand. I was in the Kiss Army when I was younger.
What was that for?
Kiss.
I know, but why were you in that army?
Well, because that was a big deal. When I got Kiss Alive too, they with it came something you could mail in to be in the Kiss Army, and you'd get like a patch and different newsletters.
Did you ever wear the makeup, Don?
Never did. No.
No.
I was in the Friends of Janet fan club.
Janet Jackson?
That's right.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Janet from Three's Company, which any discerning eye would tell you was the more attractive of the women on that show.
Any discerning?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
That she's sneaky hot.
That's fine, but that doesn't mean any discerning
eye. Well,
that's
just, I can say whatever I want, right?
Yeah, but it's not right. You would say...
Well, Suzanne Summers, that's a layup, right? That's easy. No. The discerning eye.
I'm a Terry guy myself.
Ooh, interesting.
Oh, yeah. See,
I'm more Mrs. Roper.
I like
frankly.
Where he's going. I like the thinking.
Mrs. Roper had game. You could tell.
Well, really? Did she? She couldn't even get Mr. Roper in bed.
Because Mr. Roper had no interest.
No, because
she. But she could have gotten Jack if she wanted. I'm telling you.
The Moomoo sold it.
Always does.
Yeah.
Always does.
All right, woman who can pull off a Moomoo can pull off anything.
And it's easy to pull off a Moomoo.
Well, I knew you'd say that.
Don's a little slow on the uptick this week. He didn't know the Chance the Rapper Derek Jeter thing. He didn't understand that.
Well, that's not
that.
Slow on the uptick. That's just – well, no, that part was. I think it just meant not being into him. But, no, a little slow.
Do you believe that the – because Lindor set this hard and fast deadline, right, that it might hurt their chances of getting Conforto? Because they haven't concentrated on Conforto at all. And even Cohen said, Syndergaard's coming off an injury. But now you could get him at a little bit of a bargain, maybe. If he comes back in July and is 12-0 with a 1.50 ERA, he's not going to be a bargain when you have to get him at the end of the year.
But can't we see now that there's money to be spent? And unless Conforto or Syndergaard just ask for ridiculous money.
Right.
If you are a rich owner, it's almost inexcusable to lose your own free agents. These are guys that played, that want to be Mets, have success with the Mets. I mean, both those guys played in the World Series with the Mets. So if Cohen's got the money, and we know he has the money, I don't think you should be able to lose your own free agents.
He said something really interesting, and I guess he had maybe a YouTube chat with Wayne Randazzo.
Yes.
And it was really interesting. He said, I will not go over the threshold by a couple of million dollars. That doesn't make sense. He said, but I was willing to blow through it for Bauer. And that what he's saying is smart. I'm not going to go to $211 million and lose draft status and things like that. That doesn't make sense. But if I could get a great player like Bauer, I'd go to $230. So he is a very smart businessman. I definitely could see that thinking. You don't tiptoe over the line of a threshold. You plow through it like the Dodgers did.
Yeah, what's the difference?
Right.
Dollar over, $100 million over. What's the difference?
Right.
You're over.
Because if you're over, forget about the tax, which is only 50% on a dollar. That's nothing. It's the damage you do from draft status and things like that. That's really important to teams, especially if you're trying to build a farm system, which the Mets are.
Now we've had this conversation before, but why not update it?
Okay.
How does that make the Yankees look if Cohen blows through the threshold? And the Yankees don't want to do it. When they're still worth, especially what came out the other day, of how much they're worth, what, $6 billion?
Mm-hmm.
How do the Yankees – I understand being fiscally responsible, but when a team in your own market blows through the threshold,
the Dodgers have done it. I can't answer for them. All I could say is that if Hal Steinbrenner wants to be snotty with people, he goes, you know what? I've spent $3.1 billion in the last 10 years and haven't gotten to the World Series, so I'll do what I have to do.
Oh, listen, I'm not sure the Yankees care, but the fan base will. And you don't think we'll get calls from people if this team comes up short again and the Mets have a higher payroll and blow through the threshold that they're not
going
to hear about fiscal responsibility, and we don't want to go over the threshold, and we don't want to support the small market teams and all that. When you've got a network, you've got a brand new building, you've got a franchise that's worth, what, $2, $3 billion more than the Mets are. Hey, do what you want, and I agree with it. I mean, I think the Yankees are fine. I don't think that going out there and adding to the payroll is necessarily going to do anything for the Yankees because they haven't been cheap. But You hear these phone calls, Michael. The guys that bash Cashman and bash Boone, we haven't won since 2009, we're cheap. How would that look?
The only thing that not going over the threshold I think cost them this year, the only player that I think they might have regrets about is JT Realmuto. That's why they stayed with Gary, who's, $6 million. That's his salary. And JT Realmuto signed a deal with what? $21 million a year. So, and I know the Yankees have always liked JT Realmuto, and he's a great player. That's what the adherence to the threshold, I think, cost them. Now, if Gary Sanchez goes out and has a great year, doesn't look bad, right? But Gary Sanchez had a terrible end of the spring.
Oof. I'm worried about this fella.
I think he's 4 for his last 32 in the spring, and half of the at-bats were strikeouts. After a good start to spring training. So I even said that me and David and Paul had a Q&A with Steve Serby in the Post today. I said, he's got to get off to a great start. Can you imagine the phones lighting up? Don, after the game on Thursday, opening day, if he strikes out four times, what are the phones going to be?
It's our open. That's the first thing you'll talk about when you come on, and that's all anybody will care about. And this is what frustrates the Yankee fan is, do they believe that Sanchez will be better than Real Muto, or do they look at it and say, we're getting him cheaper?
Here's my question, Michael. Are you ready?
Yep.
And you may think I'm a simpleton. This is the question.
I don't think that.
Okay.
I know it.
Right. This is the question. What is the bar? Because Gary has been, the last 2 years, atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, I'm talking about behind the plate. Just averages insane. It's like numbers I've never even knew existed in professional baseball. Where is the line? And I understand it's probably not based on batting average, but home run output, etc. Where is the line where you think the Yankees can rest easy and go, okay, we made the right decision, he's going the right direction, everything's going to be all right?
I think if he hits 225 with 35 home runs, and if he's okay behind the plate.
And what if it's
225? If it's like it was last year, it's not good.
What if it's 225 with 23 home runs?
According to where they bat him in the lineup, because the lineup's so stacked now, he could be batting eighth. So if you get 23 out of your eight hole, are you getting more out of your eight hole than every other team in the American League? That's the way you'd have to look at it if you stack it up. Hey, Peter, there's pressure on him. And Joel Sherman had a really interesting comparison column in the Post. I never even thought about the comparison. He compared him to Kevin Moss.
Yeah, they saw both, that.
It was a great story by Joel. I don't know how he came up with that, but Moss had like 23 home runs and 256 at-bats coming up in the middle of the year, in his rookie year. Gary had 22 home runs and like 21 home runs and 220-some at-bats. And they both never really matched it. Although Gary's gone to the All-Star game twice after that. Kevin Moss fell off the face of the earth. They just learned how to pitch to him. But Gary was expected not to be good. He was expected to be extraordinary. So anything less than extraordinary is going to be a disappointment.
But is extraordinary still in the port?
I don't know. After last year, I mean, good would be really nice.
I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, so at what point do your expectations get changed? Where this is going to be a guy that is going to be, you know, he can hit a bunch of home runs. You know, there were moments. He had that grand slam against the Mets, if you remember. I mean, he's had moments last year, but still, you're talking about a guy that's going to hit 136, strike out a bunch of times, and hit 20 home runs.
Here's his parachute. Let's say they say, okay, he has a terrible first 2 months. Are they prepared to hand the catching job, full-time catching job, to Kyle Higashioka? Now, there's nobody in the minors that's ready to play in the big leagues. Robinson Chirinos has played in the big leagues, but he's starting at the alternate site with an injury, so he's going to be out a while. Are you ready to hand it over to Kyle? That's the decision you have to make, because I don't think you're acquiring a really good catcher in the middle of the season. So Gary might have some latitude with a bad start, but, you know, the Yankees announced that I think 10,000, I'm rounding it off, 10,800 fans are allowed per game starting on opening day Thursday. Last year, he hit 147. There wasn't a fan in the stands. What does that 147 become if every time he steps on the field, he gets booed?
And that's enough to make noise, Michael.
Oh, 10,000 is enough to make noise. Absolutely. And it's the type of noise that you'll hear specific comments, too.
You know, I was going to say that, Michael. There's something about the crowd being less that almost makes it easier to hear.
Right. You can't hear words in a din, but there's not going to be a din with 10,000. Right. You'll hear, hey, you stink.
And you know, there's all, and those 10,000 plus that go, they're diehards. So,
I mean, if you have to get vaccinated or pass a test, you're a diehard.
Yeah, nobody's schmoozing clients. Nobody's, hey, let's go to a Yankee game today. These are people that really want to go, and they're Yankee fans, and they get it. So when you have 50,000 people, like how many of the diehards really boo? You're never going to get 50,000 to boo. Some of them are looking at their phone.
Boo.
Some of them are not paying attention. But most of them will boo, and there'll be nothing else to drown them out.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting because this is a different dynamic now. You cannot perform poorly and get away with silence. I mean, I was worried last year that they could hear what we were saying. I mean, it was dystopian in ballparks. It really was weird. Now with 10,800 people at Yankee Stadium and a little less at Citi Field because it's a smaller ballpark, the players will hear what the fans have to say.
We've had our moments, Michael. Were Randall getting serenaded with MVP a couple of weeks ago? We heard that clear as day, right?
Yep.
Did you hear the impact that the Buffalo Bills fans had for that playoff game? 6,500? I think that at one point a timeout had to get called. So, yeah, Yankee fans are crazy. You get a little less than 11,000 people in the building on opening day. He goes 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts. Oh, he's going to hear it every time he goes back to the dugout.
The exact number Thursday at the stadium against the Blue Jays, 10,850 fans will be allowed in to every game until they up it, from 20%. I think you know this. Drop Madness continues today. So keep it right here on 98.7 ESPN in the 4 p.m. hour when we announce the matchups, and be ready to cast votes for each one at TMKS ESPN on Twitter. Drop Madness is presented by Wendy's, where quality is our recipe. Wendy's, we got you. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Andrew in White Plains. Andrew.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
So just out of curiosity before I made my point, just one question because I was calling about Lindor. How old is he? Because is this going to be his only chance at a contract?
Yeah, 27.
So even after the 10 years,
yeah,
he might get a couple more then. But my thought was, is if he ends up getting 11 for 350, I could see him being greedy because this is going to be his only paycheck. But if he's that young, I mean, he could potentially keep playing.
Andrew,
what
shortstop at 36 or 37 is getting another contract? So this is his last big money contract.
Yeah.
Well, big money, absolutely. But right. I mean, Brett Gardner's still playing.
But you look at how much less Brett Gardner makes now as he's gotten older. He takes 1 year deals at less money.
No, sure, but it's still better than him getting zero, right? So if he wanted to still play and he got $15 million, you know what I mean? Like so the 325, if he took that, that's not his ceiling. You know what I mean? Where if he was 30, that 10 years 325, that's it. He's never gonna make any more.
And if he was 30, I don't think he'd get a 10-year offer.
But this is probably gonna be. I don't think you're gonna see players bang around that much like they used to. I mean, if he's gonna come off a 10-year $325 million contract, turning 38 years old, he might just decide to retire.
Yeah, but players love to play, Don. Yeah.
I know they love to play, but if it's going to be, is he going to be a backup short? But right now, Gardner's a fourth outfielder. Is Lindor going to be your fourth infielder just to continue his career? Is he going to be like, listen, I banked a lot of money. I'm now on the back end.
I'll give you a perfect example, Andrew. There's not a more iconic Yankee. There might be as iconic, but not more than Derek Jeter. And when he got to be that age and was ready to sign another contract, Brian Cashman said, this is all we're going to get, and if you want more, go look for it somewhere else.
Sure. But so the point I originally called with, too, is that, Don, I kind of didn't agree with your point that, it would have been a waste if they traded for him, because if they end up – let's just say Lindor doesn't sign and they traded those prospects for, just the 1 year, but they end up signing one of the other free agents that you guys talked about earlier, isn't it kind of a wash? Because you would trade those prospects to at least start building the team and show you're serious and start competing right away. But, I mean, if you get someone else like Trevor Story and you get a comparable stat line at that position, what's the difference if it's actually Francisco Lindor or someone else? It's kind of a wash at that point, right?
Yeah, but what about 2021? I mean, if they go to the playoffs this year and Lindor helps, then I agree with you. But if they miss the playoffs this year.
I mean, you made the trade to get better right away. But in the long run, it doesn't necessarily have to be Lindor then. Because now you're competing more, and then you might be a slightly more attractive player.
And remember, what else you get, Andrew, too, is they'll offer him the qualifying offer, and they get a first-round draft pick on top of it.
But I hear what he's saying, that it's a wash. Mm-hmm. But if they end up finishing, let's say, 500, I could have finished 500 with those prospects, or Rosario, which is playing shortstop, and then I get Story, and I'd still have those assets that they could help me in other areas. I mean, they could maybe could have made a deal to get another pitcher if Syndergaard doesn't come back right away, or Carrasco turns out to be an issue down the road. And listen, it's not the end of the world, but you traded for Lindor knowing that you'd have the inside track of keeping him. Would they have given up those prospects if Lindor was going to be one and done with them? Would he have been as attractive to achieve? Otherwise, you could have just waited for free agency and sit back.
But maybe they thought that he makes them so much better this year than what they had there previously that it was worth the risk.
Well, see, that's why I said if they go to the playoffs, then it doesn't matter. But if this team ends up underachieving this year and finishes 500, then I think you wasted that
package.
But
wouldn't you say, though, that they still would have underachieved because the shortstop would not be nearly as good defensively and offensively?
No, they probably would have been even worse.
Right. I think it was worth it because, again, they're going to get the shortstop of their choosing after this. They would have had to wait this year, and they would have kept the four young players. You're right. But I don't think those players, while good, they're not deal breakers. They're not like trading Kalenic for Diaz and Cano. That will haunt them for years, like Nolan Ryan and Jim Fregosi. The Kalenic deal will haunt them forever. That's Brody's gift that keeps giving.
Yeah, that's going to hurt.
All right, we'll come back. A lot of stuff to talk about. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LeGreco Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, everybody, we're a couple of days away from opening day. Yankees against the Blue Jays at the stadium, Mets against the Nationals in D.C. I think that's the ESPN game with A-Rod and Matt Vasgersian and Buster. So both New York teams in the spotlight, should I say, and both have high expectations. But the Mets will either go into that game feeling really great about things with Francisco Lindor having agreed to a contract, or feeling a little bit down about the fact that he said he will not negotiate once opening day happens. So turning down $325 million, to me, we started the show with this, and I hold firm in this. I believe the series of tweets, the first one saying, "I'm going to crowdsource you fans," by Steve Cohen, to see exactly what you think Francisco's going to take. Then Francisco's a great guy. I just hope he accepts the offer. Then leaking it, somebody from the Cohen camp leaking it to Jeff Passan that they had dinner in Port St. Lucie and what they ate. And then Cohen confirmed it. I had the ravioli. And then Lindor had the chicken parm. I think this is all theater. I really do. I will tell you, I'm not shocked by much anymore. I'm just not. But I would be stunned if he is not signed by the first pitch of that game on Thursday. Stunned. I think the deal is essentially done. This is all a tap dance. This is all things to make it more dramatic and bring more attention to the Mets and have Steve Cohen look like the big hero that he got it done. Maybe 325 for 10 years is not the best and final. Maybe the Mets will come off that, so that makes Lindor look good as well. But if it's not a done deal and it doesn't happen, and he doesn't agree to it, there's so many layers to this, Don and Peter, that I can't comprehend. I can't comprehend a player walking away from $325 guaranteed million dollars, guaranteed, where you could have something catastrophic happen to you this year, where there are going to be about five outstanding top-level shortstops available on the market this coming offseason, where there aren't that many big-market teams that A, will pay that kind of money, B, would be in the market for a shortstop, because one of those teams is the Yankees. They have Gleyber Torres. I don't think with the impending situation or decision coming on Aaron Judge that I don't think that's why the Yankees love Lindor. But they knew that if they traded for Lindor, they'd have to sign him, and then you can't have four players making $30 million a year on your team. You just can't. You can't have that. Even the richest teams are not going to do that. So the Yankees will be out. They'll be out. They're not giving 325 for 10. So the Dodgers, I guess they could be in if Seager leaves. If they don't want Seager, they could be in, I guess, on Lindor. But one of those shortstops is going to be left without a seat. So why would you give away 325 guaranteed million? But Buster brought up a great point. He is on the executive committee of the union. So he's a definite union guy. and he hears what Tony Clark and the rest of the board is saying, you must set new marks all the time. So if a member of the executive committee, those are all the players. I believe that Zach Britton's on that committee. If they take what the union thinks is not a good contract, that's going to make them, you know, a pariah in that room. But $325 for 10, he's not giving them a bargain. It's the highest average annual value of all time for a position player. I would find it fascinating, Don, if he turned this down. I can't see it happening. It just doesn't make sense.
It's not going to happen. I can appreciate Lindor asking. What's it hurt to ask? All right, you know you're going to get 10 years for $325. Okay, well, how about 12 for $385? And if he says no, he says no. Or maybe they come back and they work something out where it ends up being 12, but for less than $385. And maybe it's $350 or something. They kind of go back and forth there. It's worth the ask, but I cannot imagine that he will set foot on the field on Thursday, having turned down 10 years, $325 million, and is going to take his chance on getting more at the end of the season. Because now you're talking about a player that's going to be, you know, 28 years old going into next year, 29 by the time we get to the fall, and then trying to see if he can't squeeze 12 years out of somebody else. He's not going to take that chance. He can get hurt. He can have a bad season, which if he did have a bad season, which wouldn't be that crazy, Michael. How many times have we seen players come to New York and struggle right away?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw it with Giambi. We saw it, how many times where a player comes here, not great right away, then eventually he gets going. Well, if he has an average year, Michael, then that's 2 years that he hasn't been great.
Why would you
take that chance?
I'll tell you this, Don. If he doesn't take this money, it's a dumb move. Now, I say that even if he gets more money in the free agent market, it's still a dumb move. It's like hitting on 16 when the dealer's showing a 3. You might pull a 5, but it's a dumb move. You're not supposed to do it. It doesn't make sense.
I think he's hitting on 17, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's almost hitting on 18, trying to pull a 3. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's...
What
it's...
are you doing? And I think that Steve Cohen is going to get some criticism from Met fans for what would seem like trolling if they don't sign him. Because those tweets, if they weren't sure they were going to sign him, they then revert back to being trolled. He's trolling Met fans.
Yep.
Should we crowd? I'm going to crowdsource. Like, hey, Steve, you got $14 billion. The art in your front yard of your home is worth more than what you're offering Lindor. You don't need to crowdsource fans to see what Lindor is going to take.
And the only way that it would make sense to do that is if you know in your heart that when we get to opening day or at some point, where he just gives him the 12 for 385. Now, I think that's bad business because now you've put yourself in a situation where you almost have to give him that just so you save face on social media. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Either way, it doesn't make sense. It's not good negotiating. You run the risk of looking bad. Either way, I don't know why he took that. I love the fact that he embraces the fans. It's a complete role reversal than what we saw with Fred and Jeff all those years. But this just got everybody excited that it was done. Hey, we're just like the fans, Michael. We saw it on social media. We got a text thread going. I guess this is done. Because why else would he be sitting there trolling Met fans unless this thing was done?
And if it was done, it wasn't a troll. If it was done, it wasn't a troll.
But it's still...
Well, it's still a troll.
It's still a troll in the sense that you got the fans all excited and involved when it wasn't 100%.
No, I would say it's still a troll in that if you know it's done and you're putting on a show pretending it's not done,
I see what you're saying.
The fans could be fine with it because in the end they're getting what they want, but it's still, I mean, Don, as Don would say, it's still trying a little hard.
Now, but I do think there's part, and again, I'm not killing him. I think he's obvious. I don't know him, but I'm glad he's the owner of the Mets. We finally wake up and can be a big market team again. But there's a part of me that thinks that he kind of likes this attention a little bit. You know, I think he gets attention in the business world, but part of him owning this team, because let's face it, it's a toy. We're talking about $385 million like it's a lot of money. To him, it's not very much money. He might win and get that each day. But that's how much money this guy makes. This guy can lose $400 million in a deal and still sleep like a baby at night. You know, 99% of the country's done. He's okay. So this isn't really big money compared to the things he does on a daily basis. But on a daily basis with his big business doesn't get nearly the attention as he does as being the Met owner. Where a whole city, a whole fan base is eagerly awaiting what he has to say. I'm sure that's a kind of an addicting thing for him, where he kind of enjoys that.
But I want you guys to know what players think, though, and because he is in the executive committee, what he might be thinking. So, Frank Thomas, a Hall of Famer, big union guy as well, came out today and said, well, why should he take that deal? Why should he take less than Fernando Tatis? He's not taking less than Fernando Tatis. Fernando Tatis has a 14-year deal, and the money is more money, but he's averaging $24.3 million a year. This is $32.5 million, which would be the most new money ever given. Like a team, like Mike Trout makes more, but he signed with his own team. Arenado makes more, but he signed with his own team, the Rockies. So this, and Mookie Betts, I guess, signed with the Dodgers because he was with them. He didn't come over as a free agent. So this is new money. I don't understand why people don't get that. Also, Fernando Tatis is 21. Lindor is 27. So 14 years for a 21-year-old makes more sense than 12 or 13 years for a 27-year-old.
But this is the problem I have with the baseball union. Is that are they in this to help the players or just destroy the owners? Like, what is their objective?
Yes.
You know, but I wonder what comes first. Because your player's getting taken care of. You know, Lindor gets a 10-year, $325 million contract. He's being taken care of. Being taken care of not just in baseball, but in sports in general. Getting paid than guys that have accomplished a lot more than him in sports. All right? Now, the union, yeah, ask for more. But are you doing it for Lindor or are you doing it to just stick it to the owners? Because you're not going to stick it to Cohen. He doesn't care. He'll write the check. But what this does to the other owners, because they're looking to cripple the owners. How does that help baseball, by the way?
Yeah, this constant war does not help the sport. Does not the fact that there's not a DH in the NL this year because of a negotiating tactic by both sides is a disgrace. Both sides despise each other. Hey, DeMaurice Smith doesn't love Roger Goodell, but he knows what's good for the players. And if it happens to be good for the NFL, then he's going to take it.
Then it's good for the players. But here's the thing, and this is the problem, and this is the argument that we get into with people that are anti-salary cap, is that when a salary cap makes these guys become business partners together. And then they get more money in their pocket as the sport grows. But with this money getting thrown around, Michael, and this guaranteed money, that's important to mention too. All of this money's guaranteed.
Right.
That do they actually care? Well, if the ratings are higher, if attendance is higher, if baseball is the first sport or the fourth sport, they're getting theirs.
You know what bothers me about the players' enmity toward the owners right now? It all stems from this. They hate the owners because in the last CBA, they got their ass handed to them.
Right.
And they're really ticked off about that. Nothing illegal was done. It was negotiated. They signed off on a deal that they didn't realize the relevance of a salary threshold or anything like that. You can't be angry at them because they were outsmarted you. Just try to outsmart them this time. Instead, it's a scorched earth policy. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and look at the winning streak they had when Marvin Miller started up until that last CBA.
Yeah, they handed the owners their backside every CBA for like 30 years. So finally, Rob Manfred took it to them. I mean, he took them to the woodshed. And now they're mad. They feel like they got rooked out of something. They didn't get rooked. They signed the deal.
But in other, like even other comparable sports, because football is just out in the stratosphere on its own, but even like basketball and hockey, because of the salary cap, you have the players invested to grow the sport, to make the sport better, to do some of the things that can create interest, because then that means more money in the hopper for everybody. But it's almost like the players don't want to do that. They'd rather be able to be lacrosse, so they stick it to the owners, they get their money, and they don't care if anybody comes to the game. Like, that's not what you – don't sabotage the sport to stick it to the owners. A good relationship. They're going to go to war next year. How is that helping anybody? Because what's going to come out of that? Michael, if they cancel a season in 2022, who does that help?
And now, in fairness, we're not coming down on either side. The owners have to realize this as well. They want to crush the players. It has to be a conciliatory thing where they both take a little bit of a hit, they both get a little something, but both sides wanting to crush each other, right, that does not result in a good for the sport scenario.
Right, because when hockey canceled a season, they had no choice. They had to do it to survive. Baseball's not in that situation, and if they're willing to go the war of the both sides, you're right, pox on both their houses. If you're going to go in there and fight to say who's number one or who won ultimately, and where are the fans left? You think this support, that this sport is going to be able to survive a whole year after 1 year of barely having fans in the building?
It'll survive, but it'll be bloodied. No, it's like hockey survived.
Right. It's not going to go anywhere, but is that the way you want to exist?
No, it's dumb. It's counterproductive, and they both, I mean, I think the players right now hate the owners more than the owners hate the players, but the owners hate the players because they know that the players hate the owners, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to, I believe this is Stench in Mamaroneck. Stench?
It's Bennett.
Oh, how you doing, Bennett?
Your tweet's doing, your drop's doing well, buddy.
I couldn't believe it.
I think it's an outrage. Stench, I love you, but that your drop should not beat Sniff 'em Dead. I don't understand it, but it's trending that it's going to beat him.
It should. You know,
I was expecting it's, you know, it's Don Screaming. Let's be honest. It's, you know, Don Screaming is going to win most of the time, but I don't know.
People know funny.
Well, I see you're politicking on Twitter. You want to continue on in this tournament.
Oh, you know it. It's fun. My friends are joining in. It's so much fun.
Cool. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
But anyway, besides that, I just wanted to talk about how just weird the Steve Cohen Twitter thing is. I mean, obviously, I know he's been doing this for a while, but I mean, imagine if like you guys were working on contracts with ESPN and the Pinhead Suits tweeted, "Hey, I hope Michael takes this deal. It's a great deal." You know,
the union is not going to like this. I don't know if Steve Cohen cares, but he's not going to come off smelling like roses from this. Again, it was all fun and games until the GameStop thing blew up in his face, where people started threatening he and his family, and then he paused on Twitter. If they don't sign Lindor, he's going to get a lot of hate back on Twitter. And we don't get owners like this, Don. I mean, how many owners are this open? Jerry Jones.
Mark Cuban.
Who else? Who else can you think of that is like this? Most owners keep a very low profile.
God, how many of them are even on Twitter or have an active account?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Those are the only two that jump to mind. There's guys that have a profile, but they usually aren't on social media or like Daniel Snyder's got a profile, but he's not like somebody that's constantly in front of a camera, constantly grabbing a microphone, constantly grabbing attention, right?
Nope.
No, I mean, rich people. I mean, the dichotomy, Peter, from what Steve Cohen is in the financial world, where he was almost like a Darth Vader. Never did any profiles. If somebody took a picture of him, you know what he did? He would pay big money that the picture, he would buy the picture so that wouldn't be published. And now he's Uncle Steve. It's like he's a different human being. Darth Vader in finance and Mickey Mouse in baseball.
Well, you know what the X factor, though, is?
What is it?
He's a fan of this team.
I think he's a fan of money, too.
Well, that's what a businessman is. That's what they're driven by, money. That's what they all have in common. You know, but in this toy that he's playing with, he's not just playing with it because it makes him money or he enjoys baseball. He's a fan of this team. So I think that's where he kind of gets caught up in a little bit, where everything else is just strictly business, right? It's not about getting your picture taken. It's not about doing interviews. It's about getting the deal done. But now he can play a little bit. This is his toy. This is literally a toy for him. And part of the pleasure of playing with that toy is getting to go on social media, getting people to fall in love with you because the team starts to win. And then the second the toy's not fun anymore, like what happened with the GameStop stuff, is like, all right, well, you know, we're going to put the toy away.
And the thing is, listen, he as you said, it's a toy. He wants to have fun with it. And he's not like Steve Carell in the 40-year-old virgin where he kept everything in the box. He wants to take it out of the box and play with it. although Carell made a killing when he sold it. But here's my point. If the Mets don't play well, he's going to receive hate on Twitter. So he's got to know that that's the side of it, too. He's not going to be Uncle Stevie anymore. And he also is in the very enviable position of following probably the most disliked ownership group in New York. By a lot. Well, man, now tied with Dolan.
But
so he's following the Wilpons, so anything was going to be preferred to them, and whether that's fair or unfair. So he does have a grace period, a honeymoon period. But if he doesn't sign, if he doesn't sign Lindor, the honeymoon, I don't think he did anything wrong because he's offering a record contract. But if he doesn't sign him, Met fans will not like that.
Right.
He's going to pause on Twitter again.
And then say you go 500, miss the playoffs. Because let's face it, Michael, you know what? You know, you love or hate an owner based on how well your team does. So if they don't win, no matter how much money he spends, no matter how much he's on social media, changes the uniforms, all that, if they don't win, it's hard to love the owner when you don't win.
But you do make you do create a tougher standard for yourself when you're very outspoken. So a fan might not be really happy with 90-72. Let's say that's a bad example because they would be happy. But let's say this team goes basically 500. Do you think that if you're you end up disappointing somewhat, that disappointment feels worse if the owner's outspoken and trying to be cute on social media? Like, I don't think it does you any favors.
I don't think cute doesn't play well when you're 500. Cute plays well when you're 162.
That's
81
why
and 81 cute don't play.
That's why I'd rather just not be cute. Be transparent. Be an honest
guy.
Yeah,
transparent. Communicate with them is cool. I think that's a positive. But when you're cute, because he got cute on the GameStop stuff too. That's why Dave Portnoy went after him.
And when he starts doing things like, oh, I met with Francisco. Here's what he ate for dinner. Here's what he didn't like.
Right.
Or he's a heck of a guy. Sure hope he signs. Now you're playing games with people. And the thing is, this may be sort of a cute game to you, because you're a gazillionaire and this is fun. There are a lot of hardworking people, silly as it sounds, and you may not relate to this, Mr. Cohen, who don't have a lot of fun things in their lives. And the Mets being good would be a really fun source of joy for a lot of people. Don't be too cute with it.
Now, Peter, I know you do a great job, you and your staff, on ENN, but I've got a story that you have to follow. I hope at 6 o'clock we're going to have more clarity on this.
Go ahead.
The great Kevin Durant and Michael Rapoport.
It's something.
Oh, so you're knowing this?
Yeah, I just
read. Oh, my goodness. Michael Rapoport calls Kevin Durant a body part of a lady on Twitter.
I've kind of had it with Rapoport.
And Kevin Durant had a lot to say to Rapoport.
Oh, I can't wait for ENN. I usually can't wait. Now I can't even wait more. This is going to be fire. Fire, I say. I will take some phone calls. What was that?
Interesting day for Rapoport. He also had a lawsuit against Barstool that got thrown out.
Ooh. Oh, this could be ENN Rapoport edition. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.